on transportation and economic development, and we will open a public hearing on Robin?
House Bill 2300A.
Thank you. Okay. And we have a sign up sheet.
Wow. Oh, low rider chair.
I tried to stop him from doing that.
That's right. Larry and Ben's on
board. Oh, man.
This one has all the back of
them. I just saw Mr. Egan in the hallway, and I told him, I said, keep an eye on our committee. I didn't know it would start off to be so funny. Robin, are we going to go to...
Yeah, look, Mr. Burton,
Burton
and Sherry Shank from OACPP.
You two weren't involved in this conspiracy against my chair.
No, we weren't. We were innocent.
They just watched.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sherry Shine, Deputy Director for Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. May I say that it's wonderful to see Mr. Chair come down to our level this morning. My job this morning is to very quickly mention to the committee that we appreciated the opportunity to talk about our plans for lottery bonds yesterday, and also appreciated the questions that we received from members of the committee. We are almost complete with putting together a brief response to the questions and hope to have an opportunity either one-on-one with members of the committee or at a future time on the committee's agenda to respond to those questions and address them fully. I think it's a bit distressing to the department that these questions sound like ones that we have heard many times, and it felt like we had responded to them, but clearly we have not done a good job in fully responding to your concerns. So we hope we'll have an opportunity to deal with them after the hearing of 2300, and certainly not on today's agenda because that's not been notified. With that, I'm going to turn over to Mike Burton, who is going to give you a quick overview of 2300 and the Dash 8 Amendment and go from there. Thank you very much.
Chair George, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department, and I'm here to overview for you House Bill 2300, which is a bill sponsored by the department intended to originally to move forward some technical corrections and simplifications in the statutes that govern the department. And we recognize that while those are minor adjustments, just technical corrections, they do represent policy. They do have policy implications, so we wanted to go through those policy implications with you. Subsequent to introduction of the bill, there have been some amendments that actually introduce a couple of important subject areas, one of which is the industrial lands piece, and another one of which is a more focused approach to regional and rural investments, specifically a job creation investment or focus. So I'm going to just touch on the high points. I did distribute written testimony, and I'm prepared to walk through a section-by-section discussion of the bill. However, I thought it would be perhaps more useful to start off with just touching on the policy questions and then come back and respond if you have questions on them. As I suggest, the intention of the bill is to produce flexibility to deal with the evolving role as directed by the legislature for the department. One of the policy changes, the first policy change I'd like to address, is in Section 7, and it does relate to small business activities. There is a representative of the Small Business Council present, and he's willing to come up and speak after I run through the list. Section 7...
Would you do that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't think, unless the committee desires to do so, I don't think that there is a need to do a walkthrough of the section-by-section piece of the bill. The bill came to us on a unanimous vote from the House Trade and Economic Development Committee. The only change to the bill is the amendment that you have in front of you. So, and there is no fiscal impact. So unless the committee desires to have that level of walkthrough of issues that have already been reviewed and approved, I would suggest we move to the amendment.
Question?
Yes.
Why do we have this bill if there's no money connection?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is a bafflement to us also. We don't know why. There was a referral. I'm actually glad there was because of it gave us the opportunity to add the amendment that I would like to talk to you about. But these are, as Mr. Burton indicated, primarily technical adjustments with some focus on issues that were raised by the NASA consultants, particularly having to do with developing some accountability for the monies that go to regional boards.
I'm fine.
Are you guys okay? Now, I was curious, and Mike, maybe you could deal with that. One of the things that I've been asking for, and that is I've got to see a change in direction, knowing that we're actually going to maximize the dollars that we have. We're actually going to see job creation, and we're all sensitive, you know, to the work that Senator Yee did and a lot of concern about some of the issues that she raised. Would you like to address some of those things? I mean, I see things in here that point to a direction statement or change. If not, would you just want to talk about dash nines?
Chair George, I, as I suggested, there are two important, while I think they're still fairly represented as technical correction, there are two important policy considerations that are inherent in this bill or included in this bill, and they are about job creation.
Okay, if the committee wouldn't mind, would you guys mind that we hear this?
Mr. Chair?
Okay.
It's not just you.
Okay.
When we started, Mike said something about flexibility to the agency,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to do that, but we still don't know, other than hallway conversations, that this agency is going to spend the next 2 years on immediate job creation. And so I'd need to know what the flexibility is we're building in to give to them and how it's going to play into what we want to do, because if it's too much flexibility, I'm hesitant to do it before we know what the ultimate outcome will be.
That's fine. I didn't want to take the committee's time if, in fact, there wasn't concern, but we should proceed then.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to have an opportunity following this presentation to at least discuss the issues that we heard yesterday.
Right.
With respect to the signature research, the OCAD efforts, technology transfer, those issues. I'd like to discuss those, if we might.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're not prepared to do that. I mean, this bill is only dealing with the economic development piece of it. So if the committee wishes to do that, I know that there are pieces of information that I need to have before I can have that discussion with the committee.
But when I say discuss, I'd like the opportunity to have the platform at least for a couple of minutes to have some reflections.
That's fine.
That's all I'm asking for.
Okay, let's do this. We have additional information we're trying to accumulate to get a better picture of what was discussed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And would you be comfortable to wait until we had that, or would you, at the end of this period, we're scheduled, in fact, let me get to it. Senator, you opened up. We only have a public hearing on 2300.
No, Mr. Chair, it's also a work session.
Yes, well, that's
but
right.
No other bills.
But no other bill.
That's correct.
There are people who may want to be here and may need to hear what you have to say. They would be here if we posted it.
That'd be fine.
Would that be fine? Thank you, Senator.
So would you like, Mr. Chair, if I may, would the committee like to schedule another public hearing for follow-up questions on the informational session, on the informational session we had yesterday?
Yes.
Okay.
A diagram of exactly what was being talked about. To me, everyone I talked to in the committee seemed to have a desire for more clarity.
Right.
So let's do that. We'll plan on doing that.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Burton, we'll let you then describe relative to the changes, or maybe some answers the committee's looking for.
Chair George and members of the committee, I'll try to touch on what I think are the important ones based on the conversation I just heard. If you'd like to get into any detail on any of those areas, I'm happy to spend time. If you'd like to touch on some of the other areas, either highlighted in the testimony or that you've noticed from the bill, I'd be happy to do that.
Right.
But my understanding is you'd like to hear how House Bill 2300 relates to a clear direction from the legislature to get on with job creation. Is that a fair
right.
summary of the direction you're presenting?
Or how it will enable you to do things differently or require that you do things differently than what you're doing them today. Thank you.
Chair George, members of the committee. I think I can cover that base as I go through this and would be happy to further elaborate or come back and cover other pieces. And a part of that is I'll skip ahead to Section 15. Section 15 recognizes that there is a budget crisis also with the small business development centers. The small business development centers are a wholesale vehicle, if you will, for the department to deliver business management consulting services to small businesses throughout the state. The department does not directly provide consulting service to small businesses, instead contracts with, by law, with the Small Business Development Center Network and with a couple of state universities in those cases where the community college system can't provide the service. The budget crisis facing community colleges is placing that effort in jeopardy. And while it's not the department's desire or preference to change horses and go with a different mechanism for service delivery, in parts of the state where the community colleges may not find themselves able to deliver the service, the department is asking for the ability to contract with different service providers. So we're looking to get at small businesses. We're looking to get at job creation. We believe this is a very cost-effective way to deliver services. It costs us hundreds of dollars per job created through this mechanism. The current network is our preferred vehicle, but if they don't have the resources to continue delivering the services, we need another way to deliver the service. And this bill would allow us the flexibility, if necessary, to go outside the community college system for that service.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Question, perhaps a follow-up question. Mike, who would those other service providers be?
Chair George, Representative Smith, as I've suggested, we don't have an interest or design in that area, but examples might be local chambers of commerce, private contractors. An example that's already in play is in some parts of the state, community colleges were not able to deliver the services, and we have contracts through the network with a couple of state universities to deliver the services. Oregon Institute of Technology and Eastern Oregon University being two that come to mind.
Thank you. For the committee, I do have a potential conflict of interest, as I do have a contract with Eastern Oregon University as the director of a small business development center. With that said, how would you ensure that you don't have conflicts of interest if you were to have a private entity serve as the contract provider for these services? How would you ensure that there wasn't a conflict between a director, perhaps who's providing counseling, and helping a business get financing, helping them move forward in a project?
Chair George, Representative Smith, this, as I suggest, this is not a bridge we've crossed yet, but my expectation would be that there would be contract limitations on other services that a contractor could provide, that by virtue of entering into an agreement to receive resources from the state to this end, that service provider would agree that they would limit the scope of their activity and avoid conflict situations.
One last.
Certainly.
I actually fully support that concept, and what I would share with this committee is that would allow the service to continue to be provided. Plus, it would probably enhance the level and quality of service, because many times folks who can provide the service are not interested in becoming, very candidly, public employees. And this would allow the service to be provided without necessarily having these people become public employees. And that's no commentary on public employees. It's just a reality. So I think that's a great idea.
You talk about if they can't provide, but the language says if unable to adequately provide, so that if a community college was providing services but somebody didn't think they were adequate, who's going to decide what adequate is?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, the department is currently using a performance-based contract. That is, we pay for services delivered upon delivery. So if there's two versions can't provide, and actually I misspoke when I said can't provide. Adequately provide is really what we're after. We are looking for a mechanism to allow us to contract based on performance. But one circumstance where adequately provide comes in is the current mechanism is primarily community colleges, which are for the most part geographically defined by a tax base and a taxing district. We have an issue in North Central Oregon where the Columbia Gorge Community College district doesn't include the entire area in which we're contracting for them to provide services. So they have a problem, a conflict in terms of the taxpayers who support the community college in terms of going into, say, Gillum County, as an example. And that's been a conflict for us. So one place of adequacy of service is if they can't cover the geographic area by virtue of this tax base issue or some other issue, we would like the ability to go find another service provider that can cover Gillum County in this case.
You wouldn't be taking them out of the entire area, but only out of that area that they can't serve?
In that one approach. The second approach is if they're not doing a good job, that they're not meeting the delivering based on the contract that we've entered into, they're not performing and delivering so many trainings or whatever it is that they're falling short on in terms of the matrix of services we're contracting for, we would like the opportunity to go somewhere else and find a different service provider. That has not been an issue. The community colleges have organized under this service-based approach, and we're finding it to be administratively superior. We don't have to review financial records and whatnot. We just look at the results and see if they earn their pay. So it's possible that we could encounter that sort of limitation, but it's not been an issue so far.
Fair, George.
I'd actually like to follow up on Mike's comments to you, Senator. At the Small Business Development Center in La Grande, it's very driven by numbers. And just so you have an indication of what that center has to do, it's 189 contacts with new businesses per biennium. And when you try and get with 189 new businesses in three rural counties, that is very difficult. And yet, I mean, the standards are set at a certain level. There's very high expectations. And I'll be very candid with you. It's difficult to meet those numbers. And for the notion that these centers are doing it says a lot. And there's other parts of the budget all. We'll talk very sternly about, but this one works.
Chair George, members of the committee. The next, I would refer you to section 16 through 26A, and this is essentially the area that incorporates the A9 amendments. And this is one of those major changes that I was talking about to get to job creation. In the past, based upon legislative direction, the performance, the goals and performance requirements under which regional and rural investment programs were delivered were determined locally by regional entities called regional boards or regional partnerships, and were at the discretion of those bodies. And this gets to the NASDA piece as well. We have agreement with the counties, and Judge Pryor's here to reflect that what they really care about is job creation and leveraging resources, and they're perfectly willing to adopt a set of standard criteria that essentially relate to job creation and leverage. So they're here, and they've sent their representative in the form of Judge Pryor to come and speak to this point, but they're fully supportive of a more focused approach to the program that gets at job creation, would like an opportunity to show you that this is a valuable program and it's worthy of funding.
Senator Dukes?
In my part of the state, our regional partnership, at least unless I'm focusing on the wrong group here, is a subcommittee of another committee. And how do we get, does the main committee, who really doesn't have very much to do with what the subcommittee does, are they the ones that are going to adopt this? Does the subcommittee adopt it, in which case the main committee, if they decide to go somewhere else, is not bound by it? How do we... Accountability is something I like very much and would love to see out of this group, but it's not an unusual situation, and I realize that. But nonetheless, that's what we have.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, if the legislature adopts House Bill 2300, that performance criteria becomes a requirement of anybody receiving the resources. And at the suggestion of Ways and Means folks, I believe the co-chairs, there's a provision in the A9 amendments that says the future grants to a region are dependent upon satisfaction of the performance measures that will include these.
This is going to get... Okay,
right.
Thank you.
Comment, Chair George.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. You know, it's very important for this group to understand that job creation in every part of the state means a different thing. And what may be important in Portland isn't important in rural Oregon or on the coast. And what may be needed in one part of the state isn't needed in another. And earlier in the session, we were talking about community beautification and how that doesn't lead to jobs. Well, I would encourage any of you who think that's the case to go drive through Sisters and look at the community beautification that's gone on and what that's meant to that main street. And so as we work through this, I think it's very important that we take the lead from the people who are directly involved in this. And we've got Judge Pryor here today, and I would hope we would listen to her guidance on this, because I think she has some pretty good comments. I've heard what she's had to say on this. So those are my thoughts.
Senator Carter.
Mr. Perkins, is this going to a substantive committee on the Senate side?
Chair Duke, Senator Carter, I believe so. I believe you have the authority to pass it directly to the floor, but it's our expectation that we'll have a discussion on the Senate side.
I'm having some problems already, and since it's a substantive issue, I'll wait until that time.
Okay.
Senator Carter,
sir,
would you prefer then just go ahead and move this thing through and get it to that, with the understanding it's going to go to that to committee?
That would certainly be mine, because when we talk about flexibility, Mr. Chairman, we have to think about resources as well, and that causes me some concern. So whatever your privilege, your pleasure, I'm privileged to support.
Senator Morris.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm unclear why we're here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I probably didn't make it clear. We have a substantive bill in front of us that, in order to accommodate directions from the co-chairs, has been amended to tighten up the requirements for reporting on the part of the board and the regional boards, and provide that should they fail to meet the criteria that they themselves have established, that future allocations to the board will be based on their performance. That's the only issue we really have in front of us, and that's what I was trying to say. Ways and Means should not be amending bills, is not allowed to amend bills substantively. So the amendment that is in front of you is fiscally related, and that's why it's being introduced in Ways and Means, and that's the only issue that's in front of us in terms of this bill. But there is no problem, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in making sure that the committee members fully understand what is in the remainder of the bill, so that if they do have concerns, it can be addressed in a substantive committee.
Or how my thought pattern is how it fits to the completed budget, and whether that's going to accomplish what this committee would like to have from the agency that's with approval.
Right, that's correct.
So I'm going to leave it up to you guys. I mean, we can let these people head to that other subsidy committee and move the dash nines, right?
No, Mr. Chair. I'm recommending that this committee move the dash nines, that will be a Ways and Means amendment to this bill.
No, that's what I was saying. Okay. We would do that and allow this discussion to occur in the subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move back to the first suggestion, and that was that Robin will vote yes vote with the true measure of Diego Bialdi, go through Amendment 9 with us, okay, so that we can take care of the fiscal piece of this, right, and allow this bill to go on to the Substantive Committee on the Senate side for discussion.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Once it goes over to the Senate and through the committee there, will it come back through to us for final review?
No, Mr. Chair.
And then just so this committee knows, I don't feel comfortable passing this out knowing that once it leaves us, we don't have a final say, considering the fact that any policy change most likely will have a fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't have the ability to modify the substantive components of this bill.
But we have the ability to send this to the floor today, or to the full committee.
Right.
And I feel very strongly.
That is true. Yeah.
I feel very strongly that this committee, being that it's the Ways and Means Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, should have the final look or another look at this.
Representative, you hit the committee. You hit the question that I'm asking the committee. Is that what we want to do? I mean, we either pass the dash nines and send it to the substantive committee, or we go ahead and take a closer look at it when we're comfortable, Senator Carter.
We can sit here all day and talk about any other amendment, any other section of this bill except mm-hmm. Section 9, and can't do nothing about it. Period. That's what Robert is trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we spend our time talking about how we can tighten up the amendment number 9, then we can make a difference on that. But otherwise, all the rest of us with concerns, which I have, I guess, as Representative Smith has, we have to go to a substantive committee to deal with it. Because there's nothing else we can do, and we're just sitting here talking about it, but nothing we can do. Get them all frustrated. And so that would be the choice.
Representative Henson, do you have an answer to this dilemma?
No, I have a further question. Help to muddy the water even deeper. If you can deepen muddy water.
Anyway,
all right, this has already came through a substantive committee at the House. All right, it's now before Ways and Means. We've got an option. We can send it through Ways and Means back to the floor of both bodies. If we send it to a substantive committee in the Senate, what further action would be required in the House? Would it come directly to the floor of the House?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding this bill would go from Ways and Means to the floor of the House.
Okay.
If they change it on the Senate side, you get it for concurrence.
Right.
Okay.
I'm looking for direction here.
I'd like for us to go to at least number 9 amendment.
You want
to,
okay, let I'm sorry. You are the innocent victim here. I was very interested in what you had to say, but right now we're going to talk about dash 89.
But Mr. Chair, if I can say, I hope the agency is understanding that for all of the discussion we've had over economic development and the agency's budget, I sense that the majority of this committee is not yet convinced or understanding where you're wanting to go. So just because at some point you're going to have a budget discussion with us, I hope that hasn't escaped anybody.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it hasn't escaped me, and it leads me to the conclusion that I need to backtrack and recommend we finish walking through this bill. Because I think there are components of this bill that are specifically targeted to concerns that committee members have. And so I think if in fact the committee is more comfortable after they have heard the components of the bill, then that's fine. I mean, it's a matter of just it's an educational process. And then we can deal with the dash A9 amendments. So I don't have any problem with making sure that we do that. And
well, you know, I should have stayed gone. So, Robin, would you suggest we go back to Mike and have him continue?
Let him finish, Mr. Chair, please.
For any of you listening at home.
This would be for the people in Sweden who are trying to figure out how we do government over here, right?
Well, Mr. Chair, there is a value to understanding what it is the agency
yes.
is trying to do in terms of complying with directions that that the legislature is urging them towards. I had not understood that there was that level of concern. So my recommendation, Mr. Chair, is that we proceed.
Thank you, Robin. That's what I was trying to capture earlier. And if anyone who is listening to this, if you think this is funny, you should listen to the floor session in the Senate yesterday. Mike, continue.
Chair George, members of the committee, I need to tell you this is fascinating. Sitting on this side is really something else.
I am known as a really kind of easygoing chair. I'm not looking at these people anywhere, so I'm trying to figure out which way we are going. Right now, though, the chair has made a decision. We're going to hear from Mike Burton.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to finish Section 26 and then go back and touch on the other minor policy issues that I skipped over, just so that we're clear. I would ultimately really like an understanding from this committee as to what the issues are so that we can try to address them. Section 26B, I've covered the base with regional rural. The focus of this hearing ultimately is on the A9 amendments, and I've touched on that.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be helpful if you would explain what you were doing in Section 19.
Okay. Okay, Chair George, members of the committee, I thought I'd already covered this, but I'll step back and talk about what Section 19 is about. Section 19 will change the performance requirements that the regional boards and partnerships deal with. It will add some mandatory performance requirements. Currently, there are none. There's nothing in statute that the state has established as requirements. Currently, the statute requires that the regional boards will establish their performance outcomes, and regional partnerships, if they exist, have total discretion over that. The state has no voice in that. This section, and specifically the A9 amendments, say that job creation and leverage of resources will be performance requirements, and then go on in Section 26A to make future grants conditional upon performance, and specifically performance that includes those new measures.
Question, Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. What's the definition of job creation?
Chair George, Representative Smith. I mentioned this when we were going through our budget presentation, but we facilitated a meeting with affected groups, and with their agreement, they were part of the proposal that job creation would be twofold. It would consist of jobs created as a direct result of their investments. So my expectation is we would measure that over a two-year period commencing with completion of the project, and would actually count the numbers of jobs created by whatever company or business, whatever, that the project assists, and see how many people they added to their employment. The methodology the department uses is we divide the number of hours added by 2,080, and that's one FTE. So we would count the numbers of those jobs. We also agreed that we would recognize that some projects are only intermediate in terms of getting to the job creation. I'm going to get back to industrial answer, but that's a good example. There's an investment to make the site ready for development, but that doesn't necessarily isn't triggered by having a bird in hand in place. So we agreed that we would also look for long-term job creation as a result of that investment from the department. Usually it's water line, sewer line, streets in an industrial park. The city, typically a city, makes those, provides those services, and then a business steps up and moves into the park. So there would be jobs created on a long-term basis as well. And those are the two measures we're looking at in terms of job creation.
Further question? Does your definition take into consideration job expansion or job retention?
Chair George, Representative Smith, yeah, it's intended that there would be job creation, which could be new jobs from an existing business or new jobs from a startup business, and would also include job retention.
What about
changing the circumstances to allow a business to remain competitive?
What about an employer in a small rural community? What about an employer in a small rural community that, through an investment of dollars from this department, would be able to take a job that pays $7.50 an hour and raise it to $10.50 an hour?
Chair George, Representative Smith, that's not currently part of the methodology. We wouldn't consider that to be a new job or a retained job. I think it might be worth having a long-term discussion about whether or not it's jobs we really care about or maybe payroll. But currently, the clear direction from the legislature and all sorts of auditors is that it's about jobs. And that's
Follow up. We're friends. I'm part of the legislature. And I represent an awfully big part of the state, and it's a rural part of the state. And I'm very concerned that whatever we agree to, make sure that we take into consideration the smallest communities of the state, the communities that have 100 people in them, and that they have access to these dollars, and that they're not penalized because they're taking risks to try and create a job or two or expand a job or two, and they're not able to deliver. And where I'm from, the notion of taking a job that pays $7.50 an hour and helping an employer purchase that piece of equipment that allows the existing employee to now pay that person $10.50, $11 an hour is as much an economic gain as creating another job. And I would remind this committee that there's parts of the state where creating one job in a community has the impact of creating 100 in other communities.
Mike, one thing, you mentioned not having a bird in hand, but I'm going to tell you that, as far as I'm concerned, 26B, with the idea of dealing with these industrial lands and the mitigation, to have that there, you want to have a perch for your bird to land on anyway. And I think this is so important. The governor mentioned this early, and I think that's so important that we're taking this step, because we heard during the interim period, during the interim between sessions, examples of people saying, well, we would have come to Oregon, but by golly, there was no place for us to go. I think that's an important point. Tell us what you'll be able to facilitate relative to having that happen, as you described under 26B.
Chair George, members of the committee, I'm moving to 26B next. I would like to make a comment related to Representative Smith's statement, and that is that in some parts of the state, or maybe in all parts of the state some of the time, There's a need for new solutions to issues. And I would just ask that the committee, the legislature in general, be open to the fact that folks somewhere, Representative Smith's neighborhood or my neighborhood or your neighborhood or wherever, might be trying something new and it might not work. So I want the room to mix that into this program as we go down the road, but I would encourage people to try out new things, to experiment, and if it works, we share the news. We get it to everybody else. If it doesn't, we try to figure out why and figure out how to fix it. But I don't think that stands in the way of counting job creation, because maybe we didn't get a job from that, but we still need to perform relative to the legislative expectation that we're going to use this resource to create jobs. Having said that, I may have raised another question.
Senator Duke.
No, my question was there a few minutes ago. Because I agree with the chair in terms of the bird has to have a place to land, but I'm still back to what I was talking about yesterday. We've been dumping money into what are supposedly industrial lands for about 15 years now. And yet we're told that we're nowhere near competitive, and that's why I assume you're going to look to see, how many jobs you think we may have created. And I am very focused for the next 2 years on immediate job creation. Not let's plan for the future, because I don't think we've done any shortage of planning for the future over the last several years. Now, if that immediate job creation includes sewer and water to an industrial site, so be it. That's fine. But we've been doing every community deserves some sort of industrial land for a very long time. And if every community doesn't have some type of industrial land at this point, then we've screwed up pretty good, and we spent a lot of money doing it. So what I'm looking at in 19 is some language that says we're going to send money to the regional folks, and they're going to do a whole nice variety of things. And I'm not seeing anything that says, look, folks, for the next 2 years, we know that your people don't have enough jobs. We know that your economy is really sagging. Let's have you focus and help us figure out how to create jobs in your community. And if it's, I agree with Representative Smith, if it's taking a $7 an hour job and raising it to $10 an hour, boy, and, you know, there's a lot of my places that would consider that economic development. Although I do prefer that we target family wage jobs as we're spending state money. But I'm really struggling with stuff that doesn't say point blank for the next 2 years, this is what we're going to do.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, and Representative Smith, we hear you. In our budget presentation, I suggested that this program is currently producing one job for every $10,000 of investment without having a focus, which we're talking about in the A9 amendment. I propose that with that focus, the program should deliver half that or twice that, $5,000 per job. And I see that as a worst-case scenario. I said that without having conversations with the local folks who do this thing, but it's my expectation in the very near term to start that conversation and agree to a criteria that I think should be better than $5,000 per job. I want to give them a chance to show you guys and us that they can make this a valuable program that gets to exactly the point you're talking about. In terms of the industrial land piece, I'll take a chance and hope that nobody from the Secretary of State's office is watching. But one of the issues I personally had with a Secretary of State report that happened fairly recently that many of you are aware of is that our investments are with cities and counties. We don't intend to create jobs with the cities and counties. We intend to create jobs with businesses. In our budget presentation, I talked about a couple of examples, including the Tualatin Industrial Park, where literally thousands of jobs have been created as a result of an investment made by the department over 10 years ago. But there's no audit thread connecting to those jobs because the company we invested in sold to another company, which has created 1,000 jobs, but there's no... What the auditors did when they went to the employment department to get records, which we'll get to later in this bill, is they checked to see how many jobs the city of Tualatin created and found that it hadn't created any jobs. I think that's fine. But the reality is there were businesses that were involved in maybe even subsequent land transactions that bought lots on that industrial park and have created thousands of jobs, which we didn't count. The methodology doesn't allow us to do that, and we don't have a contractual obligation with that company that requires them to report to us.
I ask one more question. Certainly. That one job for every $10,000, how long are we retaining that job?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, again, it gets to the question Representative Smith asked about the criteria, but it would be my expectation that we track that for 2 years, that at 2 years after the investment, we go check and see how they did. Skipping way ahead, the reason the employment department is actually here in the room is we're asking in this bill for permission to go check the employment records with firms that benefit from our activities. While we don't plan on spending the administrative time and effort running a test to find out, there's a potential that we could track for 5 years or whatever.
I was going to say, unless they're in an enterprise zone, in which case you would track the duration of the enterprise zone exemption, I assume.
Right, but typically we tell, if we have a direct connection with the business, we say, you have 2 years, and we'll negotiate that sometimes if they think it'll take them longer to get there, to reach a level of employment, and then you have to maintain that level of employment for one calendar year after you tell us to start the clock. And if you don't, you're going to pay us back, at least on a prorated basis.
I know we have the requirements. We just haven't enforced them, so I wondered.
We do in the programs that require them. We enforce them, and we are pursuing collections right now on a couple of businesses. To because they didn't do what they said they were going to do. They didn't justify the public investment.
I want to remind everyone to watch the clock. We do need to take care of our business. This is very important what we're accomplishing here, and that is because there is a desire amongst this group to find out what direction we have. Representative Hanson, then Senator Morris.
I sat through the presentations, your presentations during the budget. It seems to me the department has committed to building jobs. The governor wants job is committed to seeing jobs are created. The local partners are committed to creating jobs. The handout that I saw that I didn't read the whole thing, but I sure thumbed through it, that showed investments that have been made over the last 10 or 15 years, the number of jobs that are created, not based on in the next year or the next 2 years, but some of the jobs that we're creating now are on land where infrastructure was put in a decade ago. The jobs we're going to create in the next 2 years aren't going to be on industrial lands that we're worried about getting to be industrial lands today. They're going to be created on the jobs on land that we made investments in 10 or 15 years ago, or at least 5 years ago. I think, you know, we've had this total focus on creating jobs. I think everybody in this building and from the department is interested in creating jobs. There's no way to directly measure it. There's no way that we can send this agency on a mission to go out and only create jobs in the next 2 years. If we do, it'd be incredibly short-sighted because we wouldn't be doing the things that'll mean that we're going to be strong for the next decade. So somewhere in here is a mix of values. We want a greater emphasis on job creation in the next 2 years than has been in the past. They're still going to have to be continuing to do the long-term things because those are the things you got to do to create jobs. So I don't know. I tend to think we're kind of lathering the duck here. If I could, my hope would be that we'd. And if anybody can explain that to me, what that means, don't bother.
We were going to go to you.
I think we need to move nine amendments, move this sucker on. I don't have a great deal of heartburn either way, whether it goes to a substitute committee in the Senate or not. But I think if we want to create jobs, this morning we've got an opportunity to. And I don't know. We gave a lot of time and energy to these issues when the budget was before us. I don't know if we're making any clear progress here or not. But I'd like to, at the appropriate time, move the dash nine amendments and get us focused on something.
We need to get Senator Morris, but I would like to have to get to 26B, and then we'll Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm asking this question, but it's with a degree of incredulity. You said the Secretary of State's office was measuring the performance based on the creation of public employees by the city of Walton.
Chair George, Senator Morris, what the Secretary of State did is they collected a sample of projects the department funded. They looked at who the recipients of those projects were, and for the infrastructure programs, those are universally, by law, public entities, mostly cities, sometimes ports, sometimes counties, and they went and checked how many jobs were created at the recipient. For a number of the projects they checked into, therefore, they missed the point.
And that was all of the people who now occupy those developed lands.
Well, they checked who got the money.
Yeah.
And if I don't think they checked the city of Tualatin, actually, but if it had been the city of Tualatin, they would have said city of Tualatin got the money, and they pulled the employment records on the city of Tualatin to see how many jobs were created in the city of Tualatin. That was true on a number of the projects. All of the projects that were special public works fund or similar types of programs, that's the methodology they used.
Mr. Chairman, I can't let this pass.
Yes,
at some point in time, we're a part of a larger committee. We are going to have an opportunity to make a decision about where the $3 million of performance audits are directed from the Secretary of State's audit. I would hope that you would keep this discussion in mind when we think about where those funds are directed. So
I wasn't, Chair George, Senator Morse, I wasn't inviting that they all be spent on us.
You would like to have maybe have some input to say, whoa, would you look at this right here, which was the outgrowth of that? Because that is an amazingly successful project, as we talked about when we were hearing this before. And, you know, when it was first being done, I thought, oh, man, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. And then, boom, here it is. And you're absolutely right. It's just amazing to see how that is infilled and the kind of businesses are there that are long-term investment and job creators, too. That was a very, very good project. Are you finished? We'll go to Senate, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I echo.
You're ready to move,
Representative Hansen's perspective on this.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair George. Just really quick, earlier this session, the Speaker aggressively moved forward a bill that would call for, I believe the term at the time was economic ambassadors, and it was very much intertwined with some of what's being discussed here. Can you tell me how you anticipate that bill and House Bill 2300 intertwining together?
Chair George, Representative Smith, that bill appears to be moving forward. It has been amended a number of times. Our bottom line is we need a budget to do the work enclosed in either of these bills, but some of the work envisioned in 2300 is consistent, absolutely consistent with 2011.
Okay. We have a couple of people, additional folks signed up to speak, and I'd like to get that Dash 9 moved. Are they okay if we just went ahead and moved to work session and got this done? Everybody's nodding their head yes in agreement. Please, Gary. you and I'll talk later about 26B. And
Chair George, let me just say that I think we're covering the base. Let me just say that I think we're covering the base. That's what 26B is specifically about. Additionally, there's another bill, which I believe is Senate Bill 467.
Yes, 467.
Which is very much on point for that topic.
Right, and you mentioned that, so I was just noticing that. Is everyone comfortable that we move to a work session and actually talk then about the... or did you open as a work session? You open as public hearing.
Public hearing.
Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2300A, and half of the gavel will be in a work session on House Bill 2300A. Mike, could you stay right there, and Robin, we'll go back to you.
Right. Okay. Yes, because a couple of the tweaks, Mr. Chair, in 26A were proposed by the department, so they may want to speak to those. The first thing on the Dash A9 amendments is in Section 19, where it talks about the criteria that the regional boards will use. The amendment tightens up the description. What was in 26A had both the criteria and some of the process included. So the process-related information is stripped out of there, makes it consistent then with the amendment that is 26A that is being proposed by LFO. So, for example, on under section where it said projected long-term creation, job creation and retention activities such as is being stripped out. It doesn't add anything to the understanding of what is needed in that section. The same thing is done with the short-term job creation and retention is combined with the long-term. And then leveraging long-term investments and maximizing monies leveraged with short-term investments so that the language is very clear about the criteria. Are there any questions on that? It's at the bottom, Mr. Chair, bottom of page 12. Yes. After such as, line 45, page 12, bottom of the page, after such as, or before such as, is stripped out. And then the short-term job creation and retention is combined with that. Just, I wanted to make sure that the criteria is clear it is understood what activities and subcategories may be involved in that, but the criteria needs to be very clear.
So line 3 then becomes the end of that sentence.
Right. It becomes projected long-term and short-term job creation and retention activities.
Including the number of jobs and wage levels?
That's understood. I mean, they're going to have to, the criteria is that they will establish criteria for projected long- and short-term job creation and retention activities. What that entails is part of the contractual agreement that will be established between the agencies. We don't need to have that in statute.
Mr. Chair, is there language somewhere else that directs the agency to work toward family wage jobs?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, no.
Okay, then I'm uncomfortable taking out wage levels because from the beginning of some of this stuff, that's been a big deal. If we're doing this to create minimum wage jobs, I think we could probably invest our money someplace else and get a better deal.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, if I may. This is one where my rural perspective leads me to speak out against a requirement that jobs created be family wage, and that's I believe in the market. I'd just like to explain why I think that's an unfair criteria in places where there's double-digit unemployment, for instance. I believe the market is in play, and in certain parts of the state, in the past, some programs were not applicable. I was working in Lake County at a time when there was a family wage standard and special public works fund, and because there was double-digit unemployment in Lake County and because businesses didn't have to pay better than average for unemployed people to fill their vacancies, we couldn't use the program. So sometimes, while it's good intention and it is our goal to move Oregonians in general to better pay, to make that a criteria for program applicability can create what is essentially an urban bias.
Mr. Chair, the language that's in the bill now doesn't require family wage jobs. It simply requires that the regional group take a look at the number of jobs that they're going to be creating and the wage levels of those jobs in creating their strategies. And it seems to me that those are two things you would want them to look at in creating their strategy. And it could be any level of wages and any level of numbers. And I don't mean to disagree with LFO, except in this agency, sometimes leaving things because we know that that's the way it's going to be doesn't always work as well as I wish it did.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I was trying to do was create statutory language that is consistent with performance measures, which are the criteria that are being used. And the criteria is job creation and retention. The factors that go into that are things that ought to be included in their contracts, but the criteria is job creation and retention. So if, in fact, we are wanting to direct them to work towards family wage jobs or wage levels or that kind of thing, it should be elsewhere in the statute that is a goal of the department. But the criteria is job creation. I mean, when they report back to you, they will report back to you on the criteria for the number of jobs created and retained. And so the goal was to have both the direction to the agency and the direction to the regional boards be consistent with performance measures, which is very high level.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, if I may, I understand the point that the senator is raising, and I don't think that anybody out there would have a concern about that. We can ask Judge Pryor to speak to that if you'd like. I don't think there's a lot of heartburn about that. There is a requirement, as Doris points out, in the related to biennial reports and the reporting requirements of the department, that we talk about wage levels. So the department will be looking to track that. To leave it in statute and ask that the regions consider that and thereby keep it in the front of everyone's mind, I don't think is a huge problem.
And Mike, you hit on a point that I think is so critical, and that is when there is employment,
there is competition then for employees, which automatically drives up wages. We know that happens. I mean, we experienced that. We start off in a shoestring, and we were never paying minimum wage, but all of a sudden we saw everything rising up because that's what it took to get quality people in there to work. And so now that we're like, then this year we're in expansion, we're bringing everyone in at that new higher level. It didn't take anyone telling us to do that. It was the reality of the market and then recognizing that we want quality people in there to do the work. So I think that the main thing is, and I had a little, I highlighted it and actually showed it to Senator Duke, the wage level. But at the same time, I know that the more jobs created, the more competition there will be for employees pushing up wages. I see you nodding your head in agreement.
Chair George, member of the committees, I'm convinced the market works. This became an issue in my mind when I was working in Lake County, where most of the employment is government. The two largest employers are the federal government and the school district, and I'm not sure which is larger at a given time. But the federal government doesn't pay the same pay scale that everybody else does, and certainly not the same as the private sector. And I was living outside of Redmond at the time, or I was living in Redmond, and in Bend, when the current minimum wage was adopted, you couldn't hire people at minimum wage, even in Bend, which is a labor surplus area, because the market was demanding people pay more than minimum wage. So it was almost a moot point. But I do think it's fair to keep the goal in front of people's minds that you know we're doing this to try to float all boats to make put more money in Oregonians' pockets, whether they're business owners, whether they're self-employed, or whether they're working for a paycheck. I don't think anybody would disagree with Senator Dukes' point that it's worth keeping that in front of people.
Members of the committee, I don't have any problem with adding that back in. My primary concern was the such as industrial land supply and training and physical infrastructure, which are processes. But I don't have any problem getting an amendment to add that. It may be, you know, a good way to ensure that this is tracked.
Mr. Chair, I just want to know that those regional groups are going to have the discussion. Then they do whatever they decide they want to do, because there's no requirement here that they do anything more than talk about it.
Then consider it.
Right. Yeah.
There is a tiny bit of a problem, I think, and I could be wrong, that it will be difficult for the regional boards, when they are developing their strategies, to have any clue as to what the what the wage levels will be of the jobs that they are attempting to create. So we've got two pieces here. One is their regional plans, which has to identify what their criteria are, and then the reporting back, which then becomes the basis for determining funding. So there may, you know, the regions may have a bit of difficulty with that piece, but
I guess I would argue, Mr. Chair, that if they're looking at improving an industrial site, they understand that that's a different type of job, different pay level of job, than if they are looking at something else, helping somebody buy the hot dog stand. Nothing about that there's anything wrong with that.
We no longer have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
I know we do not, so we will stand at ease, because they're going to promise.